with two people who are dear friends and role models for me, another Clement, another Crone. And this is really shocking if you know the three of us. I am both, by the way, most of the time. But we don't exactly have like a plan for this evening, right? We haven't been sort of...
Why are you telling everybody that?
Yeah, we haven't been mapping this out for the last 3 weeks, strategizing, how we're going to do this. This is like totally ad hoc, but in keeping with being ad hoc, I just want to tell you what I was thinking about at some point this evening. I'm sorry if I'm speaking on your behalf, but what I was thinking about is a question that people actually posed me one time I shot this table, one of the guys from YU. Am I happier at age, 40-something? Or if I could, would I want to go back to be like 23 again? Like, where is there like a happier stage of life? Now, keep in mind, my wife's at the table, so you have to sort of be very delicate, So I started actually saying about how my best years of my life was the years 22, 23, and I was rooming with my my best friend, who's unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, and learning the base medrash and the chevra and the this and that. I was getting so excited, and my wife is like, she's like, sort of like shoots me a look like, you sound like you're too excited about your life as a 22, 23-year-old. And the truth is, it's a complicated question because on the one hand, like I personally, I imagine I'm a crew and I'm a cement, part of us would yearn and love to go back to be your ages, right? You're sitting here at 11 o'clock at night, you have a great chevra, all of you are learning multiple hours a day, going this summer to NC Spy Cola or Marisha Cola or Boca Cola or here or there. I mean, just the friends, the relative lack of responsibility of not having to support a family, connections with Rebbe. I mean, it's just like a great time of life. And I imagine that all of us would want to go back there. On the other hand, I can only speak for myself, but just in conversations with a lot of you over the years, the last, this year and last year, by something you experience also, is that the real complexity of being 21, 22, 23 years old, and almost sort of, or 20, finding like oneself like in the nexus of like so many different things. I mean, who am I? What are my kochos? What should I be doing with myself in this world? Why am I in this world? How do I navigate my own life vis-a-vis my family or parents' expectations? How to relate to my parents, maybe sometimes there are issues or differences, my own struggles, personal struggles, Amuna struggles, thinking about career, thinking about relationships, dating. I mean, it's like these are the years, a person's almost like in the middle of this cauldron of like 100 different things. John, you have no clue what I'm talking about. Like, no clue. And just like in every regard, like financially, like any issue, it's just, and a person can be very, very happy, as I think probably all of you are, and very super functional and realizing you have a great life. At the same time, like under the surface, there's just like a lot that goes on. Finding ourselves, a sense of security, a sense of self-love. I mean, all of these things, like, I believe these are the years where like, it really comes to the forefront. And then eventually a person gets married and they have kids, and often those things sort of like settle down a lot. Like a person like starts living their life. They have their house, they have their family, they have their career, they have a direction, they have a this, they have a that, they have like, not that it's easy. So I thought, maybe with the, with the permission of my esteemed chaverim, that maybe, to sort of spend some time this evening, people have just any questions on any topic, but maybe like specifically to sort of think about some of these things that are unique to this stage of life, or really anything, but that just sort of was on my mind. Anything you want to ask that, or?
I have something, maybe let's see if any questions.
Okay,
let's
sure.
Let's see if there's questions and then we can reflect.
And before we use our story, Aaron, this is like a, whatever you want to, stupid word you want to call it, this is like a safe space, whatever that means. We even turn off the tape recorder. There should be nothing that's like embarrassing. Everyone deals with the same issues, whatever they are, without any judgments. So just, you know, people should feel comfortable with whatever is on their mind.
So as OpenDSM, we want to do be a kind of literalist and be able to share, you know, as much as we possibly can. And that means that even if there's a myth that you don't necessarily want to do, you know, you should do it anyway. So I'd say that a struggle that I've had throughout my years at NYU, and I guess I'm still trying to figure out, is how much to sort of push yourself out of your comfort zone and, you know, pursue what you think is more idealistic versus allowing yourself to do things that you enjoy that you want. For example, did you go into a career that you don't like as much, but will have a better front up on better hours or something, as opposed to maybe something which is not a good situation, but you enjoy it more? Or another example, or maybe just, should I go into COBOL, you know, and live very, very eagerly, even though it may be very uncomfortable, you know? And those are just examples. You could have, you know, a million of them. Should I learn to shave out the semester in June, you know, summer COBOL, or should I go on a trip? You know, and all those questions. Do you have any guidance in terms of how to navigate them?
Thank you for beginning with a nice, simple issue, though. We appreciate it.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay.
I think it's a great question. And I'll start with this. We're going to say things, and I'll give an answer, and then we might disagree. And it's also okay. And we're all very good friends. Hashem, if they say something and someone else disagrees with that, and we pop in, that's where we are, which is good. I think you have to be really careful with that, because I think that obviously we don't get to choose. We preface it with like there are mitzvahs that we don't like, but obviously if mitzvahs we don't like, we submit. Right? It's a big part of who we are as Ogdeshen. So that's the difference between us and everybody else, right? Is that we submit at times and we're not interested in a certain din or it doesn't matter, alpha pichain, right? I'll do it anyway, I do it because your Baruch Hashem asked me to do it. That being said, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same thing in terms of like my life's trajectory, right? Like if a person's going to spend the vast majority of your hours of your life at a job, and if that job is a job that you don't like, but it gets you more hours to learn, you're not going to learn well. You're going to have trouble in your family. One would have trouble in your family. If you're not happy in the day, if you don't feel, doesn't mean happy like I love it, it's the best thing. I speak for everybody, I feel like I have very meaningful work in my life. Doesn't mean I'm happy all the time, but you feel like you are doing faith revestment 24. What am I co-host and what am I here to do? And I think it applies within, it should apply in our choice of profession also, because if you don't feel like you are maximizing your potential in your profession, you're not going to feel good. And it'll impact everything else that you choose, everything else you're trying to accomplish in life. So I think you have to be careful with that. In terms of here or there, a mitzvah, a this, a that, a din, a halacha, of course, we don't have a choice. But in terms of what we do for our parnasa, how we choose our life's trajectory, that's the two things that you feel, you know, are going to be, give you a simchas achayim. Because if you have a simchas achayim, then everything else goes. If a person doesn't have a simchas achayim, it impacts everything as well. I think that's how it is.
I would also recommend, and you're lucky because you're so thoughtful and self-reflective, but let's just take the issue of staying in for Jews month, or staying for Benes Mesterim. Because I agree with Rabbi Krohn, the difference between going to Morisha Kola for the summer for a month versus doing a mitzvah you may not enjoy, which serves people like different types of things, and even career is different. But let's just say, you know, something you know very well, going to Morisha Kola, right? I should go, I shouldn't go. Came Chayene Berech Shemenu, it's more learning, it's more serious, I have more of a chance of being a Tamachacham. And at the same time, it would be really nice to sort of chill right? It'd be nice to go to the Grand Canyon, it'd be nice to hang with friends, it'd be nice to do this, it'd be nice to do that. And how do I sort of balance those types of things, right? Pushing versus maybe giving into enjoyment more, right? So I think our starting point is aspirations, right? What are sort of general goals of our life? You know, a general goal is, there's sort of a goal, I want to be a Talmid Chacham. I value that. You know, I value the opportunity that Moshe Kol has. In an ideal world, if I can get to Moshe Kol and my parents will pay for it and I can go, and great, you know, amazing, right? Even if I may not love every second of it, even if there might be funner things to do with Moshe Kol, but that's part of us being aspirational and pushing ourselves maybe beyond our comfort zone. I think all of that is super important. Right? And at the same time, be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, like, what do I need right now at my stage of life? And maybe what I need right now, just for my own soul and my own happiness and maybe my relationship with God, is like to not do that and just, you know, to hang out for a month and travel the world, right? And so I think the starting point is aspiration. The starting point is pushing, right? Depending on the person, obviously, depending on what we're speaking about. And then it becomes like a human question. You know, me, Aaron Schwartz, messing for these few weeks, like, what do I feel that I need for myself in my life? And to be honest about that, you know, to be honest sometimes when you need to take time off, to be honest maybe when you're being too lazy or not focused enough, have conversations with people about those things. So there's like the larger aspiration and then sort of like the human being in the midst of aspiration. And, you know, those things come up your whole life.
They come up your whole life.
Yeah. It's not a mind saying that at least myself and Rabbi Simen, you know, we're big sports fans. I have these issues sometimes. It's like 11 o'clock at night. I have more learning I want to do. I'm sitting at my table. There's also an NBA playoff game going on. It'd be nice to, like, flick on the computer, watch basketball for, like, 20 minutes. You know what I mean? Is that something I should be doing? I shouldn't be doing? Depending on the night. Am I just sort of being lazy and just, like, running to go watch basketball? That maybe I do need that? Like, these are things, like, throughout your life, you're being mishire, like, sort of free time and other interests and pushing oneself versus human needs. Like, it's your whole life is that way, you know? And it's complicated. You want to add anything? Are you upset that I threw you under the bus about being a sportsman? This is a big secret, brother. No one knows this, you know.
No, there's really nothing to add. I think that really Lester McCrone, you know, said everything that needs to be said in this matter. Just one idea, just on the idea of mitzvos, of kiyum hamitzvos. Even within kiyum hamitzvos, which obviously you're mechuyev to do, if there's a mitzvah that you're obligated to do, you have to do it. But sometimes that when we're very passionate about yahadus, we lose focus as to what is something where HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes me do, I have to be kind of a mitzvah, versus something where it's not a mitzvah, it's not even a minhag, but it's something that I've taken upon myself, and now it's become a mitzvah. And that can be very, I don't want to say the word dangerous, but in other words, we also have to realize when we need to retreat a little bit. I think what, like, we're really blessed, and Rabbi Krohn was saying, it's very, very easy to, you know, to remove ourselves and take away things and think that that's the way that we're going to, you know, become greater Ovdei Hashem. And obviously, yes, we do have to make a darim, we do have to make boundaries, but it should be done with great seichel, because at the end of the day, we do live in this world. And it's important to be, I don't want to use the word sane, and I don't want to use the word normal, but sometimes when you pull a rubber band and you expand it, ultimately it's gonna, when you let it go, it's gonna snap and it's gonna break. And that's something where, you know, burnout, especially for many of us, when we were in high school, we weren't learning as many hours as what we're doing now. Then we go to Eretz Yisrael and we have an epiphany, a religious epiphany. And what we do is we start taking things upon ourselves and we take away things, which obviously is very important, but, you know, everything has to be done with balance. balance is very, very important. I mean, you know, in my day, you know, Rabbi Bless was talking about sports fans. But I used to, you know, in the 1980s, there was a movie called The Karate Kid. I don't know if you, nobody's, you know, you don't remember that?
The movie.
The Karate Kid was about a karate instructor who always would teach his Talmud balance. Wax on, wax off, exactly. Balance. In other words, balance is very, very important. And only you guys are truly able to understand what your balance is. Everyone has a different balance. So it's very important to be able to balance gas on the pedal while also being able to know when to put the brake on as well. And, you know, when people are newly driving, you know, they sometimes use 2 feet and they sometimes not sure when to stop and when to press the gas. And that comes with obviously having and developing sharm with your rebbeim or someone that you look up to, or perhaps an older person that's been in your shoes and you see that he navigated it with great success. I can tell you on a personal level, Rabbi Bless and I went to the same yeshiva. We both went to Yerushalayim. Rabbi Bless was a number of years older than I.
He still haven't got up.
It's true. Baruch Hashem. Yeah. So Rabbi Bless is 4 years older than I, and when I was in my first year in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim, so Rabbi Bless, that was the year, I guess, that why you started a little bit later. You're there, Elisman, yeah. But you saw a person like who had that balance, tremendous hasmada. That was somebody that I looked up to. I saw someone that had a tremendous amount of hasmada, but yet also a certain normalcy. So find a Rebbe, find a Mashkiach, find an older mentor that perhaps has been there and done that, tried it, stumbled, but got up, went weiter, and so forth and so on. So,
if you don't mind, Asher, before we get to you, I just want to be at that for a second. And sort of thinking actually about being an Yerushalayim. I went through a high school, which probably none of you, Bettefill High School in Baltimore. You know, it's not, you wouldn't call it a bastion of oneness. That's probably a fair way of.
That's the tagline.
Bastion
of
oneness. Or not a bastion of oneness. That was my tagline. You know, and I went to Yerushalayim, and I was just very, 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 you know, very motivated. And I remember, sort of to Reisman's point, there was like maybe at some point during my Shabbat year, and even for a couple of years in YU was actually much healthier in that regard. But like, I wrote up a schedule for myself in my locker. You know, go to bed, this is 12:30, 1:30 in the morning, sleep for 3 hours, you know, get up over here, daven dasikin. I had a whole shiloh based on the chazanish, daven dasikin miyachidus, and then I put this whole schedule in another my locker. I made sure everyone saw the schedule. So much of that was l'shem shemayim. I mean, it's definitely coming from a place of like enormous avos hatorah, and so much of it wasn't. You know, so much of it was me trying to sort of feel good about myself, or being seen in a certain type of way, or being known as a certain type of l'shem bet guy in yeshiva, or being no. And it's like really important, besides for the healthiness, right, as I'm speaking about, that everything we do is sort of like coming with like a certain healthy perspective, right? I mean, if a guy makes a decision, I want to go to Moresh HaKolel, I want to learn more, I want to do this, I want to do anything. And I'm Baba Cheshem about it, I'm healthy about it, I'm making sure I'm getting enough sleep, I'm making sure this, amazing, right? The person is just pushing, but it's being driven by something else, you know, some void or some need or some something. And then, so not only is it not going to be permanent, you know, it just, you know, then our Avodas Hashem becomes a sort of colored by that in a way, you know, it becomes tainted by that. So, you know, so it's always like checking with ourselves to make sure, yeah, we're hugely aspirational, but also very healthy, and not that we just have some broken void that we're filling somehow, you know, as being an Eved Hashem or intensive Eved Hashem. And that's also very important for like long-term, quote unquote success as an Eved Hashem. So, and anyway, Asher, you want to?
How would you distinguish this, you know, having the stuff on the tank way and of taking the back seat and like trusting that everything's being run by Hashem versus, you know, like just a general mindset, like, you know, psychologically in the sense of like, you know, being relaxed and chilled and how do you like they interact and how they can help you? I mean, I guess in a fair amount of growth of like,
so the dynamic between like being chilled because you're chilled versus chilled or relaxed because you're Baal Bitachon and how those two things interact with each other. I'm not sure that it's a steer per se. I think it's a value in being chilled for chilled sake. You know, you're not like so easily aggravated. You're not, you're mavra midos of not even mitzvah bitachon, but just as far as your personality and letting things go, and that's great. I guess the question is within that, is there. I guess the question is that a person who, beyond just being chilled out and laid back and nonplussed and all those things, you know, but you're a real Baal Bitachon, that means that you can not just sort of give in whatever the personality is, not to sort of give in to the personality type, right? I mean, you're a chilled out person, but when you need to X, Y, and Z because of Bitachon, or when you need to be more active, or you need to push yourself, or you need to, whatever the case is, you know, are you willing to do that, right? Meaning, that's not particularly clear, but I'm having a hard time. Give me a second, and maybe I can.
I'll tell you a story that happened to me. Okay, I was dating my wife. It was my senior. My last year of college, it's possible that the person sitting to my left was the person who encouraged me to go out with my wife.
You're blaming where I spent for this?
No.
Okay. Yes.
So that was helpful. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much.
And it's going very well. It's going very well, Baruch Hashem. And I was a little bit like not sleeping so much because we were talking a lot. This is like 4. We had gone like 3 or 4 days. And I was a little bit I wasn't all around. And I was driving my parents' car, and I was coming around this corner, and like I wasn't paying attention, and I got a car accident. And I told my parents' car. It was actually pretty dangerous. My sister was in the car. Baruch Hashem, everyone was fine. But my parents' car was total goodbye, finished. So my dad came to pick us up, and we're in the car. I'm in the back seat, and I said out loud, "Someone understand."
That's the wrong, you know.
Father looked in. My father's not very. My father is a very quiet person. He looked in the rearview mirror. I don't know if he said anything. Didn't have to. If he said anything you want, or he just looked in the mirror and be like, "Are you? Like you just destroyed my car." So I got a little confused because that's what it is. I didn't say this to him. I shut my mouth at that point. I apologize. And I came back to Yeshiva at some point and I talked to Rabbi Twersky about it. And I asked him. I said, "Was I wrong?" Because it's true. Rosh Hashanah didn't want it to happen. He could have. upsets me with your room. He said, because that is that situation you have used, he didn't say it in this way exactly, but you have used the bitachon to abdicate your personal responsibility. Right? You had a choice. Meaning I didn't have an active choice, but I was not responsible in that moment, right? For whatever way. My point is, the reason why am I bringing this story? Because sometimes we use bitachon as an, you know, when it's opportunistic, when it works for me, yeah, like, oh, like, I really don't feel like writing this paper, like,
okay.
Bitachon. Okay. It's me. Now we're here. I wrote this chazanish, right? Like bitachon. Like, that's like, is the bitachon becoming something that I, again, we don't usually do it this, you know, overtly, right? It's something that I'm making use of because it's convenient, or like Rabbi Blas said, no, the bitachon is, and Rabbi Spiritual is all the time, that it's you can't build your bitachon when you're in a bitachon challenging moment, right? It's a different story. But that there are those moments, right, when we are feeling really worried or upset or concerned because of something that maybe we can't even control, right? So there's no shtetl to be done. And that's the moment we got to ask myself, okay, so then maybe that's the moment to think about bitachon, right? Or making a choice to do something I know is right, even though it's going to be difficult for us as a relationship, whatever it is, but it's the right thing to do, but can I rely, can I have my bitachon in that moment? When it's not convenient, it doesn't work for me. Maybe that's one of my
favorites.
Just to piggyback again what Rabbi Blatz and Rabbi Krohn said so beautifully, is it like we know that there's a time for everything. And I guess a big nafkamina, whether you being chilled is a simen of bitachon, is again in a situation, you know, when things get difficult and things are challenging, you know, are you able to remain composed as well? Now, that doesn't mean that you come and say the car accident was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but at the end of the day, assuming it was Rabbi Krohn's car that he totaled, if his personality, his disposition, is that he is typically chilled, and he also totaled his car, and he still remained calm, I don't know if the word is a bal bitachon in as much as he's a bal midos. And I think, ultimately speaking, a person that is a bal midos, so I think that a person who is really, really, really a person that works on himself and works on his midos, by definition, what will manifest is that he is a bal bitachon. Because it's impossible to work on oneself and mamela not be a bal bitachon. So if a person is a maivar al midosav, that means he's working on himself. He is a bal midos. So he's someone that can give in. He's maivar al midosav. So what's driving him being able to give in? Because he ultimately realizes that everything emanates from Hashem. So a bal midos by extension, a person who's not a bal kas. So I've worked on my midos. I am no longer a bal kas. I'm able to take a step back. What's driving that? What's driving that is that a person appreciates that, why am I getting upset? In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the belt. In other words, a person who truly understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the belt ultimately is not going to get upset when somebody cuts him off on the road, or whether, you know, somebody took the last, you know, peanut butter cup or whatever it might be, because again he realizes that
may be too much.
So in other words, if a person is chilled because he's worked on himself, and the way you figure that out again is if it's your car that you totaled and you're still chilled, so that's a bal midos. And if you're a bal midos, mamela, most likely what's driving your continued growth is the fact that you have bitachon in Hashem. You you truly have faith that ultimately there's no reason to get upset, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the belt, and ultimately he's in charge. Now, between me and you, I mean, that's a tremendous target. You total your car, and again, if it's your father's car and you're not upset, so right, that's easy. right, that fakir. In other words, that doesn't mean that you're a Baal Bitachon. It means that you're lacking in midos. I'm not saying you will hurt.
Thank you very much.
No, in other words, I'm just using Rabbi Cohen's example. In other words, that just means you're Baal Bitachon. You're a lack of a Baal Bitachon. In other words, because it's not. In other words, very, very important. So your ruchnius should be somebody else's gashmius. In other words, you have to be considerate of other people's possessions and other people's feelings and other people's time. You know, so ultimately speaking, a person who is considerate of others, that's the greatest manifestation of a Baal Midos, and Mamila is a Baal Bitachon. I don't know if that was clear, but
To not belabor the point, Rav Aiken and I have been having like a 10-year conversation about these things. Senator Volbe speaks about a lot, and a lot of Shava about sort of the natural impulse of man, right? If you're just someone that never gets angry because you're just, that's your natural impulse, right? Then the question is, when you do have to get angry, and there are situations, a person has to be like, no kin v'no zer k'nachash, will you be capable of doing that? I mean, there's a whole reason you're living a certain way of life, in chesed, in sablonos, in patience, and is it because like that's a developed mida? Or is it just like you're a passive person, right? And as much as we sort of value our natural tendencies, those are sort of natural tendencies that also have to be crafted and shaped by what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want from me, what are the situations? And that means sometimes even if your natural tendency is to be Baal Chesed, like sometimes like that, like the right thing to do is maybe remove a kid from yeshiva. You know what I mean? The right thing to do is maybe sometimes send your kid away from home. The right thing may be this, right thing. And like if all you are is just like a nice guy who's giving and giving and giving, then like that's not crafted by like morality and by the Ratzon Hashem, right? And so it's always like natural tendencies, but making sure that those natural tendencies are within like a misgaret of sort of proper expectations and values, not just
As people should be a big range of people who practice religion on different levels, a lot of times you can kind of look at someone who does it a lot differently and maybe look down on him, but in a realistic sense, something that's like actually practical for someone to learn about. How have you guys found that like there's actually a practical way to start looking like strictly at the positive in people and mamish like a real Olam Yisrael of like everyone, not just someone who's like on your level or like only an Olam Yisrael, let me do this kind of stuff, but like mamish like to look at it and be like see the actual positive in him. I think it's a good place because you guys
deal
a lot of people and constantly.
It's a good question.
But you guys are so good. You're so good. Please. So again, so your question is how does a person reach a level of truly looking at someone and saying, you are awesome? So I think that there's two possibilities. I think the first and I think the most effective way of doing that is being able to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given koichos to everyone. And if you hone in on the milas of that person, everyone has a mila. Every single person has a mila. So even though he might be lacking in, let's say, religiosity, he might be lacking in that area, but he's so funny. I so enjoy being with that type of personality.
And when you truly get to know a person and realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given this person a koyach, so all you're doing is you're looking at them for their value, not their lack of value. And by the way, it's such an important midah to have in any relationship. When you're married, Emir Tashem, in other words, there are going to be things that you just find dissatisfied with. And the reality is that this is going to be your spouse. So what you need to do is focus on the mitzvahs. And that's also going to be when you're finding a spouse. And it's going to be in every arena in life. There are always going to be people that don't measure up to what you perceive in any area, whether it's religion, whether it's personality, whether it's in disposition, whether it's in how they look, where they come from. So you have to hone in on that idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt value in creating this person. That's, I think, very important, and something that, and I think also at the same time also realize that, you know, at the end of the day, we're not all that. In other words, when we realize that you know, like God knows that I'm in Oizvarf, so which I speak for myself, I'm in Oizvarf. So it's so much easier to look at someone and say, Baruch Hashem, we're both in Oizvarf. Try it; it works, and then you'll realize that we're really not so different. And of course, Baruch Hu will find perhaps more value in what he has to offer than perhaps what I have to offer. Just some thoughts.
First, I want to offer rebuttal, seeing that Gary Spencer already mentioned I've known him since he was 18. We should all be such an Oizvar. And
I'm the chief Oizvar.
Yeah. We can't reach the Maila. As the Gemara says in the Gilbah, sort of the godless Oizvar is like, you know, exists in humility, exists in cottonness. And that's a Chodesh Baruch Hu, right? And we all have that sense. We all know our own Erech. We all know our own value. We all know we're intelligent. We all know this. And we also know we struggle with a thousand things. You know, I certainly do. We all know that, you know, I wish I'd spoken to my parents differently, and I wish I was a better husband sometimes, and I wish this, and I wish that, and I wish, like, you know, it's not I wish. Just the reality is that, and when I come from that place of my own greatness, but also humanity, the world looks very different. You know what I mean? It's like a spirit of compassion that you can just look at everyone with. And it's the more we're in touch with our own humanity, the more that compassion just like emanates from us. The three of us have been blessed to be Rabbanim of Shuls for many years. I no longer am, but was for a lot of years. And the coronary cement are really Rabbanim Chashuvim in Teaneck. So you'd appreciate this story. If you really, really, really want to work on Avodas Midos, be a shul rav. It's an amazing job. And it's also a job where it's like, you know, that's my friend, most of you know Tani Glass. So Tani is a good friend, Eli Rasner, who's maybe we and KBY together. Eli Rasner's older brother, Menachem, and like sometimes kind of would go over to the Rasners and Menachem would be like beating up on Eli or like, you know, throwing stuff at him. And like, Eli's a sweet little guy. And I was like, no, that's good for you. It's a Midos boot camp. So every once in a while you have a situation in life which is like a Midos boot camp, right? Anyways, I spent my first year, just I'll tell you my own personal life, I grew up in an amazing shul in Baltimore. I wasn't totally serious, but it's just like a very kosher shul, and then yeshiva in Israel, and then I spent like all my years here. Like, I didn't know what a balabas was. So, like, to me, a balabas, it's all about this. It's like, you didn't know just like the world of the balabas. Like, I knew this world, you know. And the world is not like the four walls of this institution, for better or for worse. So I remember my first year being a shul rav in Muncie, I'm in the middle of an asana tokef, and two knuckleheads in the back corner are talking loudly during asana tokef about the Yankees score from the night before. And these guys are like, hey, what are you, you know? And it took every ounce of energy to not go back and throw a punch or do this. Or it's just like, I was just steam, there's like, there's steam coming out of here. It's like, yeah, for me, Dowling and Kim Kipper and this guy there. And like, and then I, you know what, a half an hour later I realized, guys, this guy didn't go to yeshiva. This guy's yeshiva had bad experience. They don't know anything. They never had my rebellion. They didn't have my parents, my life experiences. Like, they're coming to shul, and they're sending their kids to yeshiva, and they're keeping kosher, and they're good people, and they give tzedakah. It's like, I love these people. Do you know what I mean? It's like what Cook says, that it's like, it's impossible to not love another Jew. It's impossible, said Rav Cook, to not love the Or Hashem, Shemeyer, B'chol Echa V'Echad. And it's true. I can honestly say, I don't think there's a person in this world that I don't like. Not that I'm such a great person, but it's like, how do you see a person and not like, wow, you know? Some people make it difficult, you know? But if you really, you know, you really work at it, it's like, you can love every single person for 1,000 reasons. And if you don't, that's on me. That's because I'm too judgmental, or I'm too this, or I'm in a bad mood, or I didn't sleep enough, or I didn't this, I didn't that. That's on me then. If I don't love a person fully, it's because I need to work on myself.
The only thing I would add, but it's just the same thing that you both said, is that I always find that the more I know somebody, the more I get to know them, the harder it is not to like them. Most of them. Not all, but most of them. And I would say that, like, in terms of, like, life, like, sort of what Mary Blast Timothy was getting, like, wanting to be 21 and 22 or wanting to be, you know, older. One of the things that I found, even being, you know, in my shul now for a lot longer, so I can look out, even if it's not the real advantage of being a shul, you get to face everybody when you're down, it's the worst thing in the world. But you look around, you know? And every person that you know something about them, something that's really hard in their life, something really great that they do that nobody knows about, but you know. And that the more you know, if I think a judgmental thing about somebody, I probably don't really know them well yet, or we're not thinking about what I really know about them. But the more you get to know human beings, there's something in there that's good. Or something that's hard, that you can be down the path of in a really unmistakable way. I mean, it doesn't have to be fake. And I think that's it. That if you want to, like, if there's a particular person that you don't like, or a particular person you find yourself more judgmental about, we have people like that in our lives, get to know them more. And the more you get to know them, you're going to find plenty of things to like about them.
You know? I would just say, what Eric Cronin said is absolutely right. You know somebody, their struggles, and their life, and it's like, it's also true that sometimes that the people that you know the best and you're closest to, sometimes that's the most challenging with, you know, where there's expectations, siblings, parents, you know, children. You know, that becomes complicated. You know, people you know so well and you're so close with, and maybe you feel disappointed by in certain things, or then that becomes really challenging. You know, how do I sort of overlook some of my hurt, or some of my things I didn't get, or maybe abandonment, or maybe this, like, the closer you are to someone, the more you love them. And also sometimes the closer that circle gets, the more it's harder to just like navigate like that landscape. And that's also, you know, that's not a small thing. Yeah?
Yes, so I have a question for you. Last week you mentioned the term. I know it's sometimes an issue or open content for Bob
Austin.
Like, what's that? Phrase, like, even like the phrase, like, as a Bob Austin answer. Like, I give up time for conversation. So I guess on one hand, like, there's like, we should like see like a shift in the new yeshiva, we should feel like the news is very important. But how do you navigate that culture of kind of being kind of things which is not my God, I don't know what. And then also, maybe this is just me, but I find sometimes that like, in yeshiva there are some of those that excel in like more on the yeshiva versus not yeshiva.
Wait, so then the people that went?
There's some videos that I'm like better at when I'm in yeshiva. But I also find that like when I'm in the context of camp or home for a few weeks, I'm like kind of a more like open understanding person for the people that aren't, you know, similar to me. So like, is that kind of like a sorrow in like how we act in yeshiva, like our mindset and like
sure. Do you mind if I take the first question, if you don't mind if I jump in? So I think I'm very, very against, and maybe I wasn't always this way, but anything that's like disparaging, right? You know, we can have an enormous sense of our own erech as Klal Yisrael without having to speak about goyim, or he's a goy, he's a this, he's a that. And it's one of the main things I love about having sort of gone through YU. Like, it's not the way that people talk. Like, I can have great pride in who I am and what I do and what my values are. And if I'm doing that in a sincere way, I don't have to, like, denigrate anybody, right? And I agree with you about sort of balabatim. You know, there's something that's sort of like in yeshiva, it's like a balabatim, it's like a bad word in a way. And I think it's absolutely wrong. You know, you can say, like, for you, Yoni, you know, you're a tremendous masman, you're going for smicha, and this is what you want, and this is what went for your family, and without denigrating, you know, anybody or looking down at anybody. And I think that's especially true, I mean, quite honestly, when you look at people like your parents, you know, what they do in the community. And, you know, when I came to our shul months ago, and I saw people who were, you know, doctors and this and that, coming to Minyan 3 times a day and learning and like, I'm like, wow, like these are like real heroes. You know what I mean? A guy who's like working and doing this and doing that and raising a firm family and spending $100,000+ a year in tuition and learning and like it's easy sometimes being yeshiva. Like that's hard. You know what I mean? And at the same time, like, you know, you want to turn full life for yourself. You want to learn for X amount of years. And, like, there's room for both of those things. You know what I mean? And it shouldn't... But anything in life, you know, it shouldn't, like... The Torah, the beauty of the Torah in this lifestyle is radiated by positivity and, like, lifting up the world and not sort of, like, negativity to the rest of the world and, like... You know, more compassion and whatever it's, whether it's non-Jews or it's Avatim, whether it's this, whether it's that, whether it's a guy in YU without a Yam, whatever it is, I guess, you know. So, anyway.
Just, Rabbi, last mention, the first point. Rabbi Kron, did you want to say something? Or, Rabbi, the last mention, the first point, I just want to just focus on the last point that you had mentioned. And the idea of being in yeshiva and perhaps certain midos you have in yeshiva versus outside of yeshiva. And I think that's such an excellent and it's a powerful, powerful statement. And it's really an indictment on B'nai yeshiva, in any yeshiva. Torah is empowering. It's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to bring a person to great humility because it's Torah Hashem. But ultimately, it becomes Ubesorah So Yege Yom Balayla. It becomes our Torah, and we take great pride in it, and we're very excited that we chap it and we're good at it. But the reality is that when we're good at something, and we feel empowered by it, and we take ownership over it, it leads to great gaiva, great haughtiness. And that, perhaps, is also why it's very, very important, especially why the yeshivas, in addition to learning, to balance that propensity to feel haughty or to feel better than somebody else, it's so important to also learn Musar, because what Musar does is it allows a person to take a step back and understand what it is that he's doing. The Nefesh HaChayim writes that a person in the middle of his learning should stop for a few moments and focus on this being Torah Hashem, that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. And even the idea, the notion that we even understand one word in a Mishnah is a Chiddush. In other words, this is
This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's train of thought. There's no reason or explanation why we're able to understand anything. So how are we successful in our limudim? It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us siyata dishmaya. We have help. We should not understand anything. How are we supposed to understand the train of thought of Tanoim and Amoraim? We don't understand the godless of these people. These weren't people. These were malachim. These are mamish angels. And yet we're expected to understand their dialogue, their train of thought. To read a Rambam, the Rambam, every word that he wrote was written with Ruach HaKodesh, a Rashi. We belittle a Rashi. All you did was Chumash Rashi, or all you learned was Gemara Rashi. To understand a letter of Rashi, what went into a letter of Rashi. Rashi, again, he wrote his parish with Ruach HaKodesh. That's not pshat. That's not stam. So we have to understand that we're successful because HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to be successful, and the way that we bring that out is by incorporating Musar with our limudim to really humble us and to give us perspective. And on top of that, have a Rebbe. Someone who when you see your Rebbe, you feel like you're talking to a Malach Hashem. Someone that again, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents the greatest anivus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has great humility. So we need to learn Musar, but it has to be Musar from a Rebbe. You have to be davuk to a Rebbe, and you have to attach yourself to someone that represents those midos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu possesses. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Rachum, is a Chanun, is Erech HaPayim. In other words, all of the midos that we should have, HaKadosh Baruch Hu possesses. How do we have that? We can't be davuk to Hashem, so we're davuk to Tamid HaKadosh. And they give us that. But it's so easy not to have that. So we need the Musar with the Rebbe, and just maybe, even with that, we'll have a fighting chance. But it's a very, very difficult balance to have that feeling of, wow, look what we've accomplished, while also having great humility. So it's Musar and Rebbe.
The only thing I would add to that is that I think, Yoni, I think you're picking up on something that's very important, and something that sometimes pains me about the communities from which many of us, all of us, come, from our Orthodox community. What we lack sometimes is that pride, that appropriate pride at being Ovdei Hashem, at being, you know, the Baalei Mesorah. I sometimes find that we feel like, you know, there's not that thing in other communities. Sometimes there's more of that pride of being who we are, being B'nai Torah. You don't find that sometimes in my Orthodox community. Why am I saying that? So it's B'davka, the Chevra, who come from that community, who have now found that pride in it, feel proud of it, and good about it, who have the opportunity to go back to your own community and to be proud, but without Gaiva, which is very hard. But if Ben Yeshiva comes back and is proud but looks down on others, so we've actually, I told you I shouldn't be so proud of it, because if you're so proud of it, you become like a bugger. I don't want that. I'd rather be the quiet guy in the office and no one knows I'm from, and whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm not being God to anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's B'davka when I come to my shul and I see the chevra who, I don't mean my shul, I mean a gentleman in the community, a woman in the community comes to shul and sees their children and the children in their community who feel this pride in Yiddishkeit, pride in being a Ben Yeshiva, pride in being a Ben Torah. But it comes with a kindness and a softness and a respect for their parents' friends and a respect for their chaver who are not just like them. And now you're like, wow, this is, I mean, that's not,
respect for the local shul rabbi. Okay.
But it's the Gemara, right? It becomes, wow, right? That's what Torah is. Right? That's what Torah. Oh, now I get it. And it makes them inspired. It gives them chizik to also feel proud. Because pride doesn't lead to denigrating somebody else. Pride leads to having more chashivas for other people. I think there's an opportunity that exists for everybody who's connected to Torah, every person who's been Torah, to bring that to others just by the way you act. You don't have to give a shiur, you don't have to do anything. Just be yourself. It's a big opportunity that exists for B'nai Yeshiva as well.
Listening with a smile on my face, I used to learn every summer in Or Sameach. And Or Sameach on Muncie was like a place where guys would come from yeshivas, like Shir Ben Azmanim, so we had like a few yeshivas there. And sometimes I would just look at the guys who were there, and there were certain yeshivas, I don't mind saying it, like you know, guys from Philly or Tells in Riverdale. You would see them, and you would say, like, I want my child to be like that person. And they didn't even say anything. They were walking, and they had a smile on their face, and they held the door open. There was, like, a kind, like, there was just something, like, emanated from these guys, you know? And there's other guys you looked at, and you're like, you're not carrying a banner.
I never want my kid to be like
you're
that.
Walking, and they look angry, and it is, and blah, 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 whatever it is. You know, they're rushing for the food. You know, they're like, they're not walking even with, like, a simcha. They're walking like they're angry at someone, and that they're like, oh, I have to get here first to get that. I'm like... And, like, in 3 seconds, like, for these guys who were, you know, most of you guys were, when I spoke here Tuesday night, but, like, FS, like, in 3 seconds, you have announced to your shul in, you know, West Orange or Whitmere, or here, there, like, who you are and what you're about and the banner of Torah. And are you, like, just, with your presence, bringing people towards that? Which is after what Ray Krohn said, you know, far more beautifully than I did, but... We only have a few minutes left, so, you know, if there's a couple more questions or whatever. You
know. By nature, I am an anxious person, and I found in the past that there are definitely long periods of time where, like, I would be, you know, my instinct would be to be very anxious about something, and then the idea of detoxing would calm me down more. What do you think about the idea of using religious principles to solve emotional problems?
Religious principles, meaning like detoxing?
Yeah, is that a healthy and correct thing to do? Where, like, granted, you know, you gotta give nothing, okay, you know, I'm trying to take care of you, there's nothing more to that, but if without that we'll be a, you know, a very different person who really have like anxiety issues, is that enough? Or should you like work on is it proper to even like use that as something that will help? First of all, I'm thinking about like even if it is, should you work on it anyway because you see the pandemic?
My brother's a geriatric psychiatrist, so he's a psychiatrist and especially his geriatrics. And he was seeing a patient in Ramat Beit Shemesh where they live. And the patient, man in his 80s, was, you know, very depressed, clinically depressed. And my brother's trying to figure out the right sort of scientific, you know, through medicine, the right of. And the son, who was, you know, in Kollel, very well meaning, the son said, I think what my father really needs is like for, if, like, you know, we should be learning more musicians together, more Derech Hashem, and like that would help sort of settle his mind. And my brother's like, feel free to learn with Sister Sharon, but he's clinically depressed. Right? That can't be the only sort of solution, you know. So I think bitachon, deep faith, the role that plays is immeasurable in any of our lives. It's also not the answer if a person is suffering from real anxiety. You know, it's not the only, it can't be the only place to go to. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu has empowered a world of mental health professionals, and there's, you know, whether it's through medicine, whether it's through other techniques, whether it's through anything, you know. Yeah, and of course, bitachon plays a big role in that, but I think a person is doing themselves a disservice if they don't take full advantage of, you know, the full range of options that are there to be helpful in any area. You know,
I think just to, in other words, assuming that it's not, no question, if a person has clinical depression, like Rabbi Bless said, he needs medicine, he needs real therapy, and obviously in conjunction with everything religious. It's not a contradiction. But in terms of a person who perhaps is not clinically depressed and has anxiety or has, you know, stress overtake them, perhaps as what we all have in our day-to-day lives, I mean, ultimately speaking, you know, we find that there are many stressful times that people dealt with in the Torah, and perhaps the Torah gives us a perspective as to how to deal with that. L'mashal, Noach HaTzadik was told that the world was going to be destroyed.
Chesed allows us to ponder other people's stresses and other people's anxieties. And that can be very therapeutic. When I help others, I don't know how it works, but God made it like that. When we help others, we feel really good, and we perhaps might become a little bit less stressed about our own anxieties. And I'm not just using it as a band-aid, assuming, oh, because when I think about people's problems, they'll cover my own. No, there's actually something very, very good and powerful doing chesed. If it makes you feel good, not because of other people's problems, but it just, what it does is it gives you perspective. It allows you to feel good. It's helpful. Chesed is a helpful tool to overcome your own anxieties and own stress in life, I think.
Just speaking, I'm sure there's been also, even though we're here late, just really enjoyable being here. Absolutely, the point of ever having these things, you know, Friday night and Shabbos, especially in certain times, it's a sort of creative ongoing dialogue, you know. We're always here, and sort of as Ray Spence said, you know, some chesed, we talk about them, but just in a bag of a levish, you know, we can see Fenna, that we see Fenna, you know, to talk things out, to have people there, as Ray Spence said before, have been begging him, and you know, mentors. So, you know, we're obviously always open and encouraging of those conversations, and I look forward to continuing that in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.